We have Senate File 760, our omnibus bill, in front of us. We plan, Senator Hand, to Mr. Chair, to have discussion on this bill till about 3 o'clock today. Is that right? Within the members here. Tomorrow we start at 8:30 and go to 11 in room 107. That will be time for amendments tomorrow. And then on Friday, we start at 8:30. We'll go till 9, break for session, and then come right back here right after session. And that will be in 107. That will be for public testimony. And so please, if anybody would like to testify, please get a hold of Brad Beers here. Please email or telephone and let him know ahead of time so we can get you on the agenda. We'd appreciate that. And again, we'll keep the comments short, brief, and to the point. We'd greatly appreciate it because I'm sure it will be a long list of people who would like to testify. Senator Hand, I'm not sure if you have any opening remarks. Oh, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, just a question in regard to the schedule. Tomorrow we're meeting at 8:30 in room 107. And do you know how long we'll be meeting tomorrow?
Senator Berglund, I believe till 11 o'clock.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for your patience in going through the spreadsheet and the summary of the bill and holding off on your questions. But I do want to try to give people an opportunity to talk about or ask questions, and we'll try it as best we can with help from counsel and Mr. Albrecht to clarify, if we can, where the questions might be. So at this point, Madam Chair, I don't have any additional comments to make, but did want to make sure that we had a chance to answer some of the questions that we sort of passed over in the earlier presentation.
Very good, Senator Hand. Any questions from the committee members? Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, on line 296 of the spreadsheet, you have an item that is labeled reduce certain congregate living rates. And maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what congregate living programs are affected and how much the rate reduction is.
Senator Hand?
Two-something.
Can I ask Mr. Albrecht to...
Here it is. 290.
Mr. Lobieco?
Talking about 296 on the spreadsheet.
One moment, Madam Chair.
Members, we're on the spreadsheet, page 2 or line 296, reduce certain congregate living rates.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, the language is actually in the appropriations article, and that is page beginning on page 141.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, this was initially a governor's proposal, and the language for it is on page 141 on line 21. And when the governor withdrew his proposal, we asked the department for the language that they would have used. And you can see that the language talks about reducing rates generally for individuals with lower needs in certain foster care settings. But as far as I can tell, and I'm certainly not the expert in this area, it doesn't really go into that much detail about the specific rates that would be reduced.
Senator Berkman.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Albrecht, no offense, but if you're not an expert in this area, is there anybody in the room who is an expert on this section of the bill?
Thank you, Senator Berkman. Is there anybody that would like to come up and mention what they know about this section?
Does that help us?
So we don't know what percent we're reducing 10%. The rates.
I believe it's 10%.
It's 10%.
It's 10%.
And it's for adult foster care, CADI, DD, TBI waivers. Is that?
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, it looks like Mr. LeBaco has found the budget page that the governor had originally, and that might help.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, yes, page 46 of the governor's recommendation.
Well, I don't have that here.
All right, I can read it for you.
Usually we have the budget books when we do the budget, but we don't have them here today, I guess.
All right, Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I can read the recommendation, the original recommendation from the governor, if everyone would like, or try to summarize it as best I can.
Please.
To achieve savings in this proposal, dollars available for services for individuals with lower needs living in congregate living arrangement will be reduced on average by 10% in fiscal year 2012 and 2013, and 15% in fiscal years 2014 and 2015. It will be effective October 1st and will affect approximately 3,600 home and community-based waiver recipients. And the net general fund savings is about a little over $12 million in the biennium, the 2012-2013 biennium.
So,
Senator Berkman?
Madam Chair, then just, did I summarize it correctly? It's for foster care, CADI, DD, and the community-based waiver?
Madam Chair, Senator Berkman, yes, CADI, DD, TBI waiver programs for congregate living setting waiver recipients.
But does it also affect other, Madam Chair, does it affect other foster care programs or not?
Mr. Lobiecko.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I don't believe so, but I can certainly double-check and get back to you.
Senator Berglund, we will double-check on that and get back to you.
All right. Madam Chair, could I ask a different
Absolutely.
Question? All right. Madam Chair, let me just ask... Yes, Mr. Albrecht, do we have signed off fiscal notes for all the portions of this bill?
Mr. Albrecht?
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, this most direct answer is no. What we have are informal fiscal estimates prepared by the Department of Human Services or the other relevant agency. They look an awful lot like formal fiscal notes, but they have not gone through the formal fiscal note process where they are reviewed by MMB and signed off by staff there, nor have they been honestly reviewed and signed off by whatever progression there is in the Department of Human Services or the Department of Health that reviews fiscal estimates or fiscal notes and signs off on them.
And Senator Berkley?
Yes. So, Madam Chair and Mr. Albrecht, how many of those are there in this budget sheet where we don't have a signed-off fiscal note from the Department or from the Department of Human Services or the Department of Management and Budget?
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I believe it would be all of them except for those that are attributable to a specific Senate file.
Senator Berkman.
Madam Chair and Senator Han, that's a lot of your bill.
Senator Han.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, as we had indicated and we went through the spreadsheet, many of these proposals were things that the governor had proposed, and we felt that a formal fiscal note was not necessary to do that, since those proposals were generated by the department and presented by the governor. I think the most significant area where we don't have a formal fiscal note is our Healthy Minnesota contribution plan. And that's a that's a legitimate question. We did work with the department. We did work with the analysts to look at our language and develop projections based on those that language. However, because we are seeking waivers to do these things, they told us that they would not be able to provide a fiscal note that would show the effect of those numbers. So what we have are advisory, I guess, opinions from the department on the numbers, but the numbers we use were provided to us by that process, but they are not a formal fiscal note.
Senator Hand. Well, I doubt very much that you're going to be able to get waivers based on my understanding of your proposal, and I believe the fiscal note that we did have on the proposal that you did have a hearing on, you haven't had a hearing on this proposal, but the one you did have a hearing on, the fiscal note clearly said that they were not giving you savings for anybody that would be in the Medicaid program because they did not believe that a waiver would be granted. And I believe that you're counting savings in the Medicaid program on this budget page.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, that's what they have told us, is that they would not show us savings because they do not believe that we will get a waiver. We believe that we can get a waiver. I have had conversations with Governor Dayton and with the commissioner who have indicated, at least to me, that they were interested in pursuing waivers. We're certainly going to encourage that. But I think that more broadly, Senator Berglund and members, what we are trying to establish is the principle that Minnesota ought to be making decisions about how healthcare dollars are spent, not Washington, D.C. We're not the only state that is going down this path. There's a lot of states that have sought waivers. Some have been granted fairly broad waivers. But I think the principle is one that we should assert in Minnesota, that we should be able to spend the money that our taxpayers contribute in ways that our elected representatives believe is appropriate. And so that's what we're trying to establish by this bill, and we are hopeful, given the comments that I've gotten from the governor, that he would agree with at least that principle, and that we can go forward and seek those waivers, and we hope to get them.
Senator Chair, I don't think the governor agrees with this particular waiver, but we'll see. I mean, you have a lot of reasons for the governor to veto this bill and this bill, so it might get hard to tell exactly which one was the biggest reason. But having a political principle is one thing. Having a budget document is another. And we have never been able to count savings from waivers that we anticipated we might or might not get, ever. And so being that we have as large a budget deficit as we have, and being that this is as large a number as it is within your budget target, I would say that it's very difficult for me to understand how we could start changing that principle now and how we could start counting savings here that probably don't exist.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Hand.
And Senator Berglund, I appreciate obviously your perspective, and we may differ on that. But I do recall that we did in the last budget cycle, we did anticipate federal dollars coming into our budget that were also not certain. And we did include those in the budget under the anticipation, or Mr. Albrecht shaking your head. No, we did not do that. I understood that
no,
we did.
We did not do that.
I stand corrected. But I think that there was the assumption that we would get some federal monies, and that's what we're assuming, that we can get the relief that we seek, that the principle is sound. I think, as I said, that we're not the only state that is pursuing this approach, and I think the question for us is whether or not we believe that as a state and as an elected body, we should be in a position to do this.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Hand, it's one thing to try to pursue a waiver. I'm not questioning your ability in this bill to do that. What I am questioning is your ability to count savings because of it. And I think you understand me when I say that that is a different thing. And I think you'll understand me when I say that we had letters from the federal government in regard to the Medicaid expansion. A number of them so that we made sure that we would comply with what we needed to do in order to get the federal money. And we had, in addition to letters, numerous conversations with the federal government about it. And so we were not pursuing dollars that were going to be in vain. We were pursuing dollars that were there, and it turns out that they were there because we are now receiving them. This savings is not a legitimate way to write a budget. And so I challenge you to give us a balanced budget before this bill leaves this committee.
And, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, respectfully, we differ, and we believe it is balanced. We believe the principle that it is based on is sound. We understand that this is a question. We are challenging the presumption that the federal government should be telling the state of Minnesota how to spend money. And so I appreciate your point that as it stands today, that's been the practice. We believe that that idea needs to be challenged, and we are doing so. We have a budget that is presumed on that, at least a part of it, and we would hope that the governor would join with us in exerting his influence with the federal government and prevailing to make the point that the state of Minnesota has the ability under its elected bodies to make these decisions.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
How much of the savings in this area on 519 is based on the bill that you had earlier presented to us of a defined contribution program, and how much of it is based on something else that we may never have had a hearing on?
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, the structure of the items in showing in 519 is the same structure that we had hearings on, essentially. We have applied it to all the enrollees in Minnesota Care as well as on medical assistance down to 75% of the federal poverty guideline. So we have heard the policy and the structure related to Senate File 32. At that time, as you recall, we were trying to apply that more narrowly to the parts of that population for which no waivers would be needed. And what we have elected to do is to expand that to include people who currently would require to, would be needed to get waivers to apply that to. But it is the same structure.
So, Madam Chair, just to make sure that we're understanding each other here, the other waiver language that you have in the bill that asks for some kind of a global waiver, there are no numbers associated with that waiver in your budget savings.
Madam Chair, that's correct. We've not elected to say, here's a global waiver, we're going to just assume so many dollars associated with that waiver. We did not do that. What we wanted to do was try to put something that is more concrete that we felt had some analysis behind it and say that's what we believe under the best analysis we have the numbers are, and we recognize we would need waivers to do that. So we haven't just said, well, here's the global waiver, we're going to take an arbitrary amount of money and attach it to that. We have not done that.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, just Senator one Berger. More question or on this item, and that is that it seems to me, if I remember correctly, that your sliding fee scale that you had in that bill for how much people would be paying in premiums and out-of-pocket costs far exceeded 10% of their income. Is that the same in the language that's in the bill we have before us?
Senator Hahn.
You'll have to remind me which maybe can you point us to the page that in the bill that language is on, and we'll take a look at that.
I don't exactly know where the staff put things in here, so I don't
yes.
know.
I believe it's Article 5, if I'm not mistaken.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, it's on page 88, starts the Healthy Minnesota Contribution Program, and the sliding scale is on pages 89 and 90.
So, Ms. White, has this
Senator
sliding...
Berglund.
Madam Chair, Ms. White, has this sliding scale changed since the bill was heard in committee?
Ms. White.
Madam Chair and Senator, no.
I guess my statement originally was correct, that the out-of-pocket expenses for individuals in this program would far exceed 10% of their income. And we have included, you have included now, Senator Hahn, the Medicaid, the entire Medicaid population of families and children in this bill and in this number that you're using on the spreadsheet. And inasmuch as it would be in direct violation not only of rules that have been written about the Affordable Care Act, but the law itself that's passed, the Congress, and I don't believe those portions could be waived by the federal government, I would say that it would be almost impossible for the state of Minnesota to get a waiver to implement the program that you've outlined here.
Senator Hahn.
And Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, my understanding is that federal law is, at least by one court, been ruled unconstitutional. I think we are all waiting to determine what that the constitutional status of that bill might be or that law might be. Again, we are trying to establish the principle that Minnesota ought to be able to make decisions about health care policy in Minnesota. And we also respectfully believe that individuals ought to be making decisions about their health care and between them and their physicians, and that is what we're trying to accomplish in the structure of this provision of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Just as you did not include any savings for a global waiver in your spreadsheet, which I believe was a wise decision.
Thank you.
I do not believe it is, however, a wise decision to be including savings on this line 519 in regard to the Medicaid program. And it doesn't have anything to do with whether I agree with you or not, because I don't agree with this whole thing. You know that. But it has to do with whether these savings are likely to materialize. And if we are passing a budget bill that doesn't have legitimate savings in it, then we're wasting our time in terms of getting to a balanced budget by the end of this session. And so, I challenge you, before this bill passes out of here, two things. One, I want to see a signed-off fiscal note on every item in this bill, and I believe every member of this committee has a right and obligation to see a signed-off fiscal note for every item you have in your bill. And number two, I challenge you to replace the savings you have on 519 with legitimate savings. Now, then at least we have a place to start with. We may not agree with the items we have in the bill, but at least then we have a legitimate starting place to have a discussion about what should be done to balance a budget by the end of the session. And if we have phony baloney numbers like this in a bill and we're trying to talk it through and end up someplace, we're going to end up with more phony baloney at the end.
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I think we could probably provide the advisory numbers that we have. I think we have those that we could put in a format that would speak to the numbers that we have in the bill. But we know we won't get a fiscal note on the line item 519 for the very reasons that you have said, is that it does require a federal waiver, and the department feels in their best judgment that that's not going to happen, and that's what they are, that's how they operate, that's how they do what they do. However, We think that this is a legitimate proposal. We think this is something that is possible. It is doable. And we would certainly invite the governor to join with us to make this happen. I think that in my understanding, the only thing that would prohibit us from doing this would be if we decided not to pursue it. I believe that if we pursue these waivers, we can get them.
And
we may disagree, but I do appreciate your comment about our not booking just money from the global waiver. We did not do that.
Well, and Senator Hahn, on the fiscal note issue, I can remember many times in the budget division, Senator Berglund, in your committee, that perhaps a document was not in place, but an agreement with the departments just because of timing issues of getting a fiscal note. But they were brought up to the table many times to say whether this was going to be a cost or whether they could do it just to be absorbed in the division. So I feel like that's perhaps something that we should trust each other on and move forward. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, it has nothing to do with trust. So let's just make that clear right now. It isn't about whether I trust you or you trust me. This is about the way the state of Minnesota does business in their budgeting. And I never passed a bill out of division that didn't at least have a preliminary signed-off fiscal note by DHS. It might not have been signed off by MMB yet, but I had assurances that it would be. And I never passed a bill out of the full Finance Committee without having that final MMB fiscal note signed off on. Because I didn't want to end up on the floor of the Senate with a mess on my hands. And I didn't want to end up having Governor Pawlenty challenge my integrity in terms of the budget that I produced. And that never happened. He disagreed with policy. He disagreed with areas of spending or cuts. But he never disagreed with the numbers in my bill.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hannah. Senator Berglund just made many, many of the points that I was hoping to make. I mean, I think one of the other frustrations that I'm feeling is a whole host of these proposals have never even been introduced as a bill as of this point, let alone gotten a fiscal note. None of us have seen these fiscal analyses that are out there. The public hasn't seen them. We're expected to vote on this bill very, very soon. I mean, I really think that the people of Minnesota deserve quite a bit better than what we're seeing here. I mean, there's all kinds of things in here. And going back to the fiscal note issue, too, I'll bring up one bill that we did here, Senator Nenow's bill prohibiting implementation of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. The fiscal note that we had very clearly said that there would be costs, but the department needed a better understanding of the implications of it, and we asked for those meetings to occur. My understanding is that the department reached out and tried to make those meetings happen. At the last hearing, they had not happened. I'm wondering if they have at this point, but there's nothing on the spreadsheets, but a very clear statement in the fiscal note that there would be costs. I believe there was $9.7 billion of federal financing on the line with this proposal, and we find it in the bill and not tracked at all on the fiscal note. I mean, these are just really fairly significant issues that need to be addressed in a budget bill. And then also, well, I mean, I'll just leave it at that for now.
Senator Hahn?
Madam Chair and Senator Lurie, as I said, the proposals, many of these were from the governor's initial proposals. I agree that we have not gotten formal fiscal notes for those proposals. We have not gotten, as far as I know, the governor's bill, have we? We have gotten it, or
Senator? In my office, if you want it, I'll bring it over.
Senator Berglund.
And I don't know if there were fiscal notes attached to the governor's bill. I understand from Senator Berglund that that she does have the bill. So we were acting in good faith that those provisions that came from the governor's proposal were ones that had been noted. And I guess I may ask Senator Nenow if he's had any further conversation on the bill that we did include in our bill of his provisions.
Senator Nenow.
I had a conversation after the hearing here with the department, I think right here at this desk, and they asked if we wanted to get together, and I said to call my office and we'll get some time on my schedule. That's the last conversation I had with them.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can anybody around the table tell us how long we have been getting in or requesting and getting waivers from the federal government to do various things for Minnesota health care? How long has that been part of our process?
Mr. Albrecht?
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, that would be a question that Katie Kavanaugh could answer, but because she's not here, I don't think there is anyone, unless someone from the department might be able to help.
Does anybody from the department here that can answer that question? Care to answer that question?
managed care.
Madam Chair, Dave Greenman with the Department of Human Services. I believe we've been using these waivers since at least the mid-'80s. I don't recall exactly how long. I mean.
Senator Higgins. Senator Higgins, yes.
So, Madam Chair, and Senator Hahn, I know that you have said several times that you're challenging the waiver process in this bill, and that's why we see some of the things that we see in this bill. But I think that your statement was very telling when you said that you couldn't get a fiscal note for this high deductible thing you have going in this bill because the department said you'd never get the waiver, so they couldn't write a fiscal note. That's very telling. They have decades of experience asking for and receiving waivers, and they know pretty well what will have a chance to get a waiver and what won't. And I think that that was a signal that this piece is very, very troubling. The other question, I have a couple of other questions, Madam Chair. One is on this piece where you are requiring people who are at 75% of the federal poverty guidelines to get health care through a high deductible HSA sort of thing. And when we had conversations in our committee, we were told that the deductible would be $3,000 to $5,000. Senator Hahn, how much of an income is 75% of the federal poverty guidelines?
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, first of all, the structure that we presume, the one that we talked about that is also included in this provision, doesn't presume that there is a specific deductible amount. It does provide an amount of money to be used by individuals where they can secure whatever plan best suits them. And we did provide some examples, but those were examples. They were not meant to be, well, this is the only thing that people could do. What we're trying to suggest is that people should have the ability to make choices about health care, and to the extent that they need assistance from the state in funding that true health insurance, that we would provide that. But it doesn't suggest that this is the only thing that you can do as an individual. You can choose whatever you wish in conjunction with the money that we would provide. There's certainly the possibility that people could contribute their own money depending on whether they wanted to buy a plan that was more comprehensive or less comprehensive, but it was presumed on the idea that individuals would make choices about what their coverage and what they wanted to pay.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, how much does somebody at 75% of poverty make in a year?
I'd have to ask Senator Council to give us the number. And I guess it would depend on what individuals.
One single person. Let's just do one person.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator, I found a family of three. That's okay. They make $13,898. You can find out one person, too, if you'd like.
Thank you. So Madam Chair, so a single person is around $8,000 if my estimations are right, and Ms. White will look it up and tell us in a little bit. But Senator Hahn, I think when we had the discussion about this bill in committee, your testifiers, the insurance agents, told us that the amount of money that is in the bill would only pay for approximately $3,000 to $5,000 for a deductible. They said that that's the amount of money that's the size of deductible that amount of money would cover. And I think it's pretty clear that if you're making $8,000 a year, there isn't going to be other money to put toward that. You said, oh, you could put more money and buy a better plan. There isn't going to be any more money. At $8,000 a year, you're lucky if you get an apartment, let alone health insurance. And you know, this amount of money is going to go to some insurance agents and the client will never get any health care out of it because they won't ever be able to get the $3,000 to $5,000 upfront money for their health care deductible. And it's a shell game. It is maybe a good plan for somebody who has a nice high income, and they can make that choice. But when you're making $8,000 to $9,000 a year, not a month, a year, there isn't any money to pay for a deductible. There's just no money. You can work it out. What's an apartment? $800 a month for maybe a two-bedroom apartment for you and those two kids. How much for food for a month? If you're lucky, what, $75 a week, $300 a month? What about transportation? What about utilities? What about a telephone? What about childcare? What about clothing? You know, tick them off, and there's no money left. And while I'm on it, the proposal that gets rid of the coverage for eyeglasses fits into the same category. I bought the cheapest pair of bifocals I could get because I was mad that I had to get bifocals, right? $600. If you are eligible for medical assistance and you need glasses to drive, to see, to do anything, where's the $600 going to come from? There's just a lack of understanding about people who make the smallest amount of money in our state and what they are capable of paying for. And this bill really disappoints me that there is no acknowledgement of the fact that when you are making 75% or even 100% of poverty, you don't have any money to spare. You have no money for glasses. I remember a man in my district who was hiring people to do some work, and he was talking about a guy he'd hired, great guy. He said he was driving a forklift, and he kept crashing into stuff. And he, you know, I pulled him in. You've just got to stop doing that. You're hurt. You're breaking things. You know, it's costing too much. And the guy was really, really sorry. And his coworkers went to the boss and said, he's crashing into stuff because he needs glasses and he can't see. He's got no money to go buy them. So the boss went and bought him some glasses. That's what we're going to go back to.
Senator Higgins, one person at 75% is $8,168 per year.
That's pretty close, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No money.
Madam Chair?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I know that I'm not going to get enough time to ask all the questions I have about this bill before 3 o'clock, so I'm going to try and pick out some of the most important ones. Let's start with line 313. This is the waiver growth line. And I guess the question that I have is, how many people does this line in the budget require to go to a nursing home because there would not be a waiver slot available for them during the next biennium?
Senator Hand, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I don't know if Mr. Albrecht, are you? What we are trying to do with this is limit the waiver or to hold the waivers to the current level of waivers. That's what we are trying to do. And I don't know if Mr. Albrecht, are you looking for some?
It'll take a minute.
Take a minute.
While he's looking, Madam Chair?
Sure, Senator Berglund.
Senator Hand, that might be a great idea if we could hold the growth of people with disabilities to the current level or the past level or whatever level you're trying to hold it at. But we do have growth in the number of people with disabilities. And so I am assuming that if there's no growth allowed here, that there would be some people that otherwise would be disabled to the point where they could not live in the community without a waivered service, and they would have to go to a nursing home or they would have to remain in a hospital. And I'm trying to find out how many people there would be like that because of this item in the budget.
Senator Hand, Mr. Ulbrich? Still looking?
Well, I can ask a different question then. I have a little list here, Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund, go ahead.
Right, let's move on.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I'm reading, so it might be a surprise to everybody, including me. An estimated $580 recipients would enter nursing homes or ICFs as a result of this proposal.
Okay. And Madam Chair and Senator Hand, I think one of the difficulties here, in addition to having these 580 people that would be denied the right to live in the community, is that it would violate lawsuits that we've been involved in. There are lawsuits both at the state and federal level that say that people with disabilities have a right to live in the community if it's possible. And I'm wondering if you've given that any thought in regard to this item in the budget.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I appreciate your point. It's part of the possibility is what we can afford to do as a state. Obviously, the context of our budget is in the construction of recognizing that we have to reduce spending in the budget, in the forecast. And so we are trying to live within our means to use the monies that we have in the best way that we can. We will giving members opportunities to make amendments tomorrow if there are things that people believe we can do differently and do better. Certainly open to hearing that and hearing amendments. But fundamentally, we have a problem in growth and spending that we have to manage, and our committee was asked to hold our spending down to a set level that results in a net reduction from the forecast of $1.6 billion. And so we are trying to make decisions based on those constraints, and so I think that's part of what is possible is the resources that we have.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Hand, that's fine, except, you know, if you invite a lawsuit, then you haven't saved money, have you?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I hope we don't invite lawsuits.
Madam Chair and Senator Hanna, I'm pointing this item out because I think it will. Madam Chair, let's move on then to line 338.
Yeah, I had questions about that.
My question is, I'm wondering if someone can tell me what...
Senator Berglund, what line was that again?
338, refinance HIV/AIDS state rebate account.
Okay.
Someone can tell me what this rebate money is used for today. My impression, and I might not remember this correctly, is that this money is used to supplement the Ryan White Act appropriation, which means that if this is refinanced and it's, you know, it's a shift, but it's not a shift from one year to the next. It's a shift from one biennium to the next. But there would be a whole biennium where there would be quite a few people with HIV/AIDS that would not get medication. And I'm just wondering if there's someone here that could clarify this item for me.
Somebody from the department that would like to address this?
Dave Greenman with the Department of Human Services again. We don't have anybody here from Continuing Care who can answer that question right now, but we will certainly get the answer.
Thank you, Mr. Greenman. And probably for the next couple days, we probably need to have.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, when would we get the answer? Because this is moving kind of quickly here. And
Senator Berglund, is tomorrow good enough, a good answer for you tomorrow? Or would you rather have today? Back to you.
I'd rather have it today if I could, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, possible? Senator Berglund will get the answer for you today.
Thank you, Mr. Greenman.
Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, then let's move on. We have to make a list of questions. I want to make sure we get them all today.
Well, Senator Berglund, there is a couple other people that would like to ask some questions,
that.
Too.
You know, maybe we won't have enough time to ask all the questions that we have, in which case perhaps we'll need some more time.
We've got to share the wealth, Senator Berglund.
So let's move on to line 567. Madam Chair, you might remember that I used to share these spreadsheets with you before you got here. This is a health care access fund transfer to the general fund. I guess my question is, Senator Hahn, are you just doing this to balance the budget, or do you believe we should be transferring money out of the health care access fund to the general fund when this is a fund that has been set up to help make sure uninsured people get access to affordable care, and it is a fund that providers pay into for that purpose, and that purpose is
Senator
an important purpose.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, and I can you can ask Senator Mr. Albrecht about the what the structure of that is, but as he pointed out in his review of the spreadsheet on line 19, it does show what the status of the Healthcare Access Fund leaves a nearly $50 million balance at the end of the fiscal year, and the tails show it growing to about $830 million. And it also compares that to the governor's proposal. So I think that the transfer, and Mr. Albrecht, you can help me, was related to some of the things we did within the rest of the bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Albrecht?
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, are you talking about the Senate's transfer from
567.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn and Senator Berglund, I would have difficulty tying that amount to other provisions in the bill.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, then I'm back to my question. Did you do this just to balance the general fund? If there were other ways to balance the general fund, would you still leave this in your budget?
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I take from Senator, Mr. Albrecht's comment that, that this may not be related to anything directly that we've done in other parts of the bill. And so we have used the healthcare access fund dollars in places where we felt it was needed. And as I pointed out, we have left a reserve in the healthcare access fund that is significantly higher than what the governor has proposed. And going forward, it it is higher. So I think that if that's what it amounts to, is using the healthcare access dollars for other parts of the budget, I think that's an appropriate use of the dollars if we're trying to deal with health care generally in the budget.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I have a general question in regard to the 20% discount on various items in the bill from the governor's budget. And I don't know if Dave Greenman is here. Perhaps he could come to the table and help me with this. I don't know if Mr. Albrecht can help me or not. But I'm trying to figure out, is that discount due to the fact that we have eliminated people from coverage here? You know, is it because we're no longer doing the MA buy-in that these items have been discounted in terms of their savings being less than what the governor's budget had in it?
Mr. Albrecht?
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, there are two things going on. With respect to any proposal that has an impact on the MA families with children, that impact is reduced by 20% because of the Healthy Minnesota defined contribution plan, because that removes families with children from MA who have an income greater than 75% of the federal poverty guideline. In addition, any proposal that has savings attributed to MA adults without children, the savings due to that in any proposal were removed because the bill also eliminates coverage in medical assistance for all adults without children below 75% of the federal poverty guideline.
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Albrecht, since we don't have fiscal notes to look at on all of these things, Do you have an idea, when you net all of this out, how much this is costing and saving us?
Senator Berglund, I think Mr. Greenman, can you answer that?
No.
Mr. Ulbrich?
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, can you repeat your question? I want to make sure I answer the right question.
Senator Berglund.
Well, I know that eliminating adults without children from the medical assistance program costs Minnesota Care quite a bit of money. I don't remember how much it costs us, but I remember it costs us quite a bit of money.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund,
Mr.
What's different in this instance is that the people who are eliminated from MA are prohibited from going back into Minnesota Care. That was not the case in other versions of that proposal that were entertained.
Well, let me ask the question differently then, because I don't know how to ask it. But all these items that are discounted from the governor's proposal, do we know how much money the governor saved that is not saved in this bill because of that?
Mr. Greenman, do you have?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I'm not sure. We just got the spreadsheet this morning, so I'm not sure.
Okay, well then.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I don't think there is an easy way for me to answer that question. I could answer that question given some time, but with what's in front of me right now, I could not answer that question.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, maybe we could ask that that get put on the list.
It'd be fine. Senator Berglund, I'd like to call on Senator Hoffman. She's had her hand up for quite a bit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is to Senator Hand. You said something this morning when we opened the meeting, and I just want you to – I want to make sure I understood it. When you started talking about the budget, you said this is not a reduction from current spending. Is that true?
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, yes, that is correct. This is a reduction from the February forecast.
Great. Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Hansel, in some of these grant programs that Senator Berglund's been asking about, do we have any real dollar reductions, or is it reductions from forecasted spending?
Senator Han.
Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, it depends, I guess, on which grants we're talking. There's a lot of grants that are in these budgets. Some of them where we eliminated entirely. These were mostly smaller grants. Some of the larger ones, there were reductions, and I'd have to look at specifically grant by grant.
Thank you for your patience, Senator Hoffman. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I'd like to go to line 611. And this is a question, maybe someone from the department can come up and help Senator Hand, but this is something that was omitted from the budget that you're recommending, Senator Hand, and these are federal compliance issues, and I believe that if we don't comply in these areas that we put our federal funding at risk. And so I'd first of all like to confirm whether that is true from someone from the department, perhaps.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, which line again are we talking about?
I'm on line 611, federal 611. Compliance.
Thank you.
And my question to someone from the department is, if we don't come into compliance in these areas, are we at risk of losing our federal funding?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund,
Mr. Greenman.
These delays are in place in order to comply with the maintenance of effort requirements, as you know, in the Affordable Care Act, and we do face a federal penalty if we are out of compliance, and that I'm not exactly sure what the penalty would be. I don't think we've been told specifically what the penalty would be, but there would be presumably would be some financial penalties involved if we were out of compliance.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Mr. Greenman. When you say some financial penalties, would it be the loss of our ERA money? Would it be we have to pay that back? Would it be loss of FFP on our Medicaid program? What range of loss of money are we talking about?
Mr. Greenman.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I'm really not knowledgeable enough to talk about what range we're talking about. I don't think it would be the ERA money. The MOE that relates to the ERA money expires June 30th. And right now we're delaying the eligibility changes until June 30th. So it wouldn't be that, but it would be some other penalty that I'm not aware of.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Greenman, perhaps you could add that to your list then.
Yep. And Mr. Greenman, this federal compliance is due 2014, is that correct?
It's just biennium.
The maintenance of effort requirement for adults is until the health insurance exchange becomes effective, which we assume is January 1 of 14. That's the likely date. For children, the maintenance of effort requirements in place till October 1st of 2019.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Greenman.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Hanna, it's my way of letting you know that I think
Senator
this
Berglund.
Is a problem area in your budget. You didn't include this funding.
And, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, thank
Senator
you.
Hanna.
As I understand it, these are provisions that we have adopted in Minnesota law that are at risk because of what the federal laws have done and requiring us to do some things differently that are about a $55, $56 million cost. And again, I would just say I think it's important that the elected representatives in Minnesota make decisions about health care. I think that we have made decisions, we've put things in place, and I think it's wrong for the federal government to come in and say, well, now we want you to do something differently, and the net effect of that is it'll cost you $56 million. I think that we should make the stand on the principle that we can write law for Minnesota in Minnesota.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, you have the ability to do that, but you do not then get to count receiving federal funds from the federal government. And your budget is based on receiving federal funds from the federal government. And, you know, I'm just, either you're going to fund this item or you're going to have to count the loss of federal funds against your target. That's my point.
Senator Murdy.
Madam Chair,
your hand is up, right, Senator Murdy?
It is up.
Like
it
this
is.
For a while.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn or Mr. Albrecht, line 434, I'm curious, is there a fiscal note on this? Because it's requiring the disabled to enroll in managed care. It's the first year I can see why it'd be an expense because you pay people up front. Then you have a $9 million savings and $37 and $28 million a year savings after that. Is there a fiscal note, or where did those numbers come from?
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, there is not a formal fiscal note that would show these numbers on it, but there is an analysis from the department that was based on specific language that we provided to them that is tied to the amounts on that line.
And Madam
Senator
Chair,
Marty.
Mr. Albrecht, do you know how many people we're talking about here?
Mr. Albrecht.
I can check.
I'd appreciate that. And also, if I could see that informal fiscal note, I'd be curious about that because I'm interested that there are savings. I think some of the disabled population is very expensive because they're getting very expensive services and saving $37 million in 1 year on that population strikes me as putting it in managed care doesn't, I don't see how that's going to save any money, let alone $37 million unless there's deep cuts. I had a couple other questions, Senator Hahn, that aren't budget related, but I know, like, I see the cloning bill is in here, and that's a purely policy decision, and I understand that you can put it in. I think you do risk a certain point that and I'm not arguing you're the only one who's done this, but the constitutional requirements in Minnesota bills to be a single subject, a bill dealing with human services funding, having cloning in it is, I'm not going to argue you're the only one who's doing it, but I did want to point that out. But I had other questions. That bill we at least discussed, like Section 6 of Article 6, minors' consent is valid only in cases of incest. In other words, a minor parent or guardian is entitled to full access of a minor child's health records in the previous section, and the minor cannot give it. Does that mean if a parent is abusing their kid, as long as they're not sexually having sexual intercourse, which is our definition of incest, if they're abusing them, beating them like heck, they still are the ones who make the decisions on all this, and they have full access to their kids' records?
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, these provisions that we included them in the bill, we are having a hearing in the Judiciary Committee this week. The timing didn't work out, but we intended to have hearings on these bills. The language that we have was language that was passed in the House, I believe. There were some amendments made, and we are going to make sure that the language we have that comes out of Judiciary is conforming to the language that had been passed previously. So I appreciate your point. We have not had a hearing. Our intent was to have a hearing, but we needed to go to Judiciary first, and just the timing of this didn't allow that. But they are going to hear it this week, and depending on what happens in Judiciary, if there are amendments made, we would make those amendments to our bill.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm glad it's going to be heard in Judiciary. I'll look forward to that. I think it's a real questionable policy. And then Section 13 there, that we would, I understand the part that you don't want the state to state shall not appropriate state funds. I mean, that seems to be you're telling the legislature not to appropriate state funds for family planning. But you are telling here, the one thing that's substantive there is telling the administration not to accept federal funds for family planning. And I just wonder, I don't remember any bills on that. Was there some discussion in your committee or some other committee of that provision?
We are on page 121.
On page 121 of the bill, section 13 of Article 6.
Senator Hahn.
I don't believe we had any bill on this in this committee, no.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I think that's going to cost the state a fortune if we don't do that, just because, what is it, one out of four of children born in Minnesota are on medical assistance. And we're going to have a lot of more kids born if we're not having family planning services. Teen pregnancy rates are very high as it is, and without family planning services, I guarantee it's going to be higher. In any case, I mean, I think that that is a very significant policy decision, and you can favor that, but putting it in a budget bill like this, it's certainly not going to help balance the budget. It's going to cost the state a lot more, but I just wanted to raise the issue that at least these two provisions I'm seeing strictly policy decisions that I think are very questionable that we didn't have any discussion or hearing of anywhere.
Senator Hahn.
And Madam Chair and Senator Marty, as I pointed out, we were trying to get the provisions on the DNA testing and the parental consent heard in Judiciary. The timing didn't allow us to do that before we had to bring this bill up, but we will have hearings on that in Judiciary. And if there are changes made, we will incorporate them into the bill.
Madam Chair, what about the family planning services issue?
Senator Hahn.
If you want to bring an amendment to delete that, we'll take it up tomorrow.
Okay. Senator Burka?
Madam Chair, I'd like to go to line 651.
Sorry, what was that, Senator Burka?
Line 651.
651.
This is a governor's request for increased appropriations for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, which has not been funded in Senator Hahn's recommendations to the committee. I believe the department did show us pretty consistent over the years growth of about 80 people per year. And if we're not going to fund those additional 80 people, I don't understand how we're going to maintain a program that would meet the constitutional muster of being able to send people to, by the courts, committing people by the courts to a program of this nature.
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, The reason, part of the reason that we looked at this is, as you know, we have been working on some proposals to modify the sex offender program. I was hopeful that that would be favorably viewed and that that would have some effect on our budget going forward.
Senator Berglund.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Hanna, I hope it will have some effect on the governor's request also, but it's not going to eliminate the need for the majority of the governor's request, and you don't have anything in here.
Senator Hanna.
And Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I think if there are if there's a desire, if this is not going to reflect what the changes that we're contemplating in the other proposal, we could have an amendment tomorrow to try to address that issue if you wish.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I understand that we can have amendments, but it is your responsibility to put forward a recommendation to this committee that is responsible. It is not my job to find you more savings in order to fund something that you have to pay for. So I guess I'm just challenging you by, before we vote on this bill and send it out of committee, that you find a way to pay for that item, because you might get some savings on it, but you're not going to get anything. I mean, you're not going to be able to eliminate the need for some of this spending.
Senator Marty, we have an answer for you from Mr. Albrecht. Did he just take off? Senator Marty, Mr. Albrecht has an answer for your question.
Okay. I almost got out of it, Madam Chair.
Thank you for saying that.
Because this is not the easiest thing to explain. Senator Marty, the first part of the answer to your question, how many people would be affected by this provision?
Mr. Albrecht, what line are we on again?
434, the item that requires disabled folks to enroll in managed care and allows them to opt out. The first assumption in the bill is that 50% of eligible people would opt out. After that happens, in the first year of implementation, there would be about 14,000 people, and over the next 3 years, it would grow quickly in fiscal year 2013 to 58,000 people, and then by 2015 to 61,600 people.
Madam Chair, the 61,000 that would not opt out, so 61,000 would be moved into managed care by 2015, you're saying?
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, that's correct. Now, the savings that are shown on this line are actually attributed to a variety of interactions in the way fee-for-service payments are processed and the way managed care payments are processed. There's also withholds and some current law rate reductions that are in place that would now be applied. Managed care rates would be subject to the HMO surcharge. All of this is a very long way of saying the savings are not attributable to any reduction in services or amounts paid for services provided to disabled people. The savings are all sort of just because of the fact of transferring the payment for those things from fee-for-service to managed care. Senator Gorey does not look like that's a good answer.
Okay, but so, Madam Chair, Mr. Albrecht, so in other words, the $37 million savings in 1 year out of about 60,000 people, that's all in the savings from the surcharges that we're putting on health plans and everything else? There's that much in just because we're pulling it out of various pockets. We're going to save $37 million on 60,000 people.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, there's like a 9.5% withhold that actually creates savings.
And Madam Chair, and that withhold is never going to be paid back.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, I believe it does get paid back eventually, but sort of a dynamic process.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, one other part of Senator Marty's earlier question was whether we could get a copy of that. And earlier, Mr. Albrecht, you kind of highlighted for us some of the distinctions between a full-blown fiscal note and these fiscal advisories. And I just have to say there's one more very, very significant aspect to a fiscal note, and that is that it is public and that everybody gets to see it. And, you know, everybody in the public, it's posted on the web. They can download it. We can all be privy to the text and the assumptions and the work that is behind that. And this legislative process is designed to be a public one. And it, with a program such as this that is as complicated as that, I think that it is a disservice to our process to be going through something so quickly without us even having access to that couple of pages of explanation and rationale and the assumptions behind it. And I would renew Senator Marty's request that we get that fiscal analysis and all of them that are behind each of these items, because you know there's a lot of questions, and I'd like to get them public as soon as possible, because we all members, you know, not on a partisan basis, we all count on members of the public also to help us evaluate these and understand if there's sometimes wrong assumptions, and we can all work together to try to make the process better. And we're missing a major component in the way that we're proceeding today.
Senator Lurie. Senator Higgins.
We're done with this discussion because it's about something else. A couple questions. And I've been flipping through trying to find it, and I apologize. I haven't found what page it's on. But there was something in the bill that said that critical access dentists can only be affiliated with the U or MNSCU you can't be a critical access dentist unless you're affiliated with a U or a MNSCU institution. And can you tell me more about that, and what does that do to rural Minnesota?
Senator Hand. And first we need to find that. Do you know what page or section that is? Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, and Ms. White, maybe you can help us find the language in the...
I'm trying. I'm still looking.
Yes, Madam Chair, I will find the language, and this was a governor's proposal.
Senator Higgins, while we're looking for that, do you have another question?
I do. As I was flipping through, I happened upon Article 7, page 121, the health licensing boards, and it looks like there are a whole lot of new fees in here. And I'm wondering how much you raise in fees in this bill.
Page 123?
123, Article 7, Section
4.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think it starts there. Well, actually, it starts the page before, 121, with the animal chiropractic registration fee, and then it has a whole lot of other things. I don't know that we had any discussions about increases in fees in the committee before either. It seems to all be new language, so it looks to be new fees.
Ms. White or Mr. Albrecht?
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, I believe that the plan is to hear those proposals later in the week.
Okay. Can you tell me how much we raise in fees?
Mr. Albert.
For which fee, Senator Higgins?
Well, the question I ask is how, Madam Chair, sorry, how much do we raise in fees in this bill?
All the fee increases.
All
in the
fees.
And we'll get back to you. I'm sure they have to do some. So we've got two questions on the table by Senator Higgins. We are having the boards come in on Friday to explain their fee increases, Senator Higgins.
Okay.
So, but we can also get you that answer. And then to the Minsky critical access, Ms. White. Yeah.
Anybody yes, find Madam it? Chair and Senator, the actual language is on page 92 at the top of the page. It's section 34 in Article 5. This was a governor's proposal, and current statute specifies that clinics that are associated with the U of M or Minsky can be designated as CAD providers. This recommendation revises the statute to indicate that only clinics that are U of M or Minsky owned and operated may be designated as CAD providers.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that's what it said. How does it affect our more rural parts of the state? You know, the access to dentistry is difficult. I understand, Senator Rosen, you've talked about that a lot. And other, Senator Lori, I think, has too, where, you know, the access to dental care is very lacking in many parts of our state. So if we're now scaling that back to only clinics that are somehow affiliated with the U or Minsky, what does it do? And does it save any money? Is that why we're doing it?
Senator Higgins, this may be a question that we'll have to add on the sheet and perhaps get some testimony on Friday, if that would be okay, to figure out exactly. I think it's a very pertinent, good question. Senator Hand?
Madam Chair, and Ms. White, this was part of the governor's proposal. And so we did have testimony on this, I believe, when we heard the governor's initial proposals. Do we have a budget sheet maybe we could refer to? We might answer that question.
Oh, that's yes, what she was reading from.
Ms. White.
Yes, it is a governor's proposal. So they presented it with the governor's budget, and it's on the governor's page 75, and maybe the department could explain how it will affect outstate Minnesota dental providers.
Mr. Greenman.
People.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins.
Don't go too far from that table now.
Right. I don't have the information right here to tell you how it's going to affect the rural clinics. What I can tell you, though, is that what the proposal says is that there are several criteria that a clinic can meet and qualify to be a critical access dental provider. So you can be a county-owned clinic, or you can be a clinic that serves predominantly low-income people that meets other criteria, or you can be a clinic that's affiliated with a academic dental program. What this does is it modifies the governor's proposal does, and presumably this one does too, it modifies the criteria for that particular item that says you have to be affiliated with an academic dental program. So it's not saying that every critical access dental provider must be affiliated with an academic dental program. What it's saying is that particular criteria is being modified.
Madam Chair, that made no sense whatsoever in my poor, feeble brain. So it's modifying the language. So rather than just saying a generic oral or dental education program, it has to be specifically Minsky or the university. Is that what you mean,
Mr. Greenman?
Madam Chair, yeah, it has to be owned and operated by Minsky or the University of Minnesota.
So a clinic at a private college that might be offering dental care would no longer be eligible to be called a critical access. I don't even know if there are any, but
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, if the clinic in question were to meet one of the other criteria for being a critical access dental provider, like being a community clinic as defined in the statute,
yeah,
or meet some other criteria, then it could still continue to qualify.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins,
what problem are we fixing with this? Maybe that's the question to ask.
Mr. Greenman? Senator Hamm?
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, the problem that we're trying to fix is partly the budget issue that we have to reduce our spending to the level of resources that we have, and some of the proposals, many of the proposals in our budget proposal are the ones that the governor had initiated, and in out of respect for the governor and effort to reach some common ground with him, we've adopted some of those proposals. I understand, and I recall when we had the presentation of the budget page, when the governor's budget was, or at least the budget pages were brought to the committee, we did talk about this, and it seemed reasonable to include that as a part of this budget. I think it does save some money. I'm not sure if I can find the specific line in the spreadsheet.
453.
It's about, in the workings of our budget, about a $4 million saving.
So Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, leaving in place all the other providers and just making this change from about who you're affiliated with a dental clinic, do you, and maybe it's Mr. Greenman, but really that's $4 million?
Mr. Greenman?
$6.5 million over the biennium?
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, the change in the criteria having to do with being affiliated with an academic health center is part of another. The proposal has two pieces. So the savings you're looking at has two pieces. One is the academic health center piece. The other piece has to do with reducing the critical access dental add-on payment through the Minnesota Care program. Currently, the add-on payment is 50% of what the provider would have otherwise received. We would be reducing it to 30% of what the provider would have otherwise received. That's the increase they're getting. That brings it to the level that the level of the add-on payment for the MA program. It brings it in line with that.
Thank you, Senator Hanegra. So we can continue this later. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, I'd like to ask some questions about line 321.
Line 321?
321. Suspend growth in the elderly waiver. Again, I am assuming that this item would have some costs associated with it in regard to increase in nursing home placements. And I am wondering if Mr. Albrecht can tell us how many elderly people would be going into a nursing home because of this item.
Mr. Albrecht? It might take a minute, Senator Berglund, if we help work on this. Do you have another question?
Yes, I do, but it's about the same item, and that is why in 2014 are we actually seeing spending in this item instead of savings? And, you know, if we see numbers going further out, does that spending get larger?
Mr. Albrecht?
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, to answer the second part of your question first, the freeze on additional allotments in the elderly waiver would be for this biennium or the 2012-13 biennium. And what I see happening there, just based on looking at the numbers, is that in 2014, the costs of the additional people who would have been diverted into nursing homes or other types of services would continue, but the savings from not allowing any growth in the waiver would end. And the answer to the first part of your question is that an estimated 256 recipients would enter nursing homes as a result of this proposal.
Okay, Madam Chair, so Senator much for Bergen. Protecting the elderly and disabled.
Yes, Senator Lurie, do you have a question? Senator Lurie?
No? No, I was... Sorry.
Any other questions from the committee? We have a list of questions that will need to be answered. And we are planning to come back here tomorrow at 8:30 to 11 in room 107. And again on Friday, we start at 8:30, session at 9. And then we will meet immediately after session and go until need be. And that will be with public testimony and some fee increases. Senator Berglin.
Madam Chair, I did have one other question, and that is if Senator Hand can tell me how much greater the operating reductions to the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health are, how much greater than the governor's reductions?
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglin, I could calculate that. We put in our budget a 10% reduction, and I can't recall exactly what the governor had proposed. It may have been 5%, I can't recall exactly. But we put in 10% reduction.
Okay. No further questions. Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you, members, for I know this has been a long day, and I appreciate your patience. I would like to, just as a final comment, remind members that our current Health and Human Services budget for the current fiscal year is about $10.1 billion. That is including the one-time federal monies that were built into our budget. The budget proposal that we have brought has spending of $10.86, almost $10.9 billion. So about a $700 million growth in spending from current levels. That's a 7% growth. And the forecast was predicting spending growth from current levels of about 20%. And what I would like to say is that it's not necessarily the easiest or most enjoyable task to try to reduce spending from a projected level, but we are not reducing spending from current levels of spending. We are going to be spending about $700 million more in this budget than we are in the current budget. So as difficult as some of these decisions have been made, that is in the context of what we have been asked to do in the course of trying to be fiscally responsible, manage our budget within the means that we have. And so I appreciate members' attention, and certainly we'll anticipate amendments tomorrow. I know we have a few members have talked to me about, so we can take those up tomorrow.
Senator Berglin.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Hand, I'd just like to say that I am pretty sure this bill is going to be vetoed. And, I mean, I could list off, but I don't have enough fingers, the reasons. So my question to you is, when are you going to get a serious proposal in front of us that might be able to be discussed with the governor's office?
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglin, with all respect to I think this is a serious proposal, and we look forward to working with the governor. We do realize we have perhaps some differing approaches. We've tried to include as many things as we thought prudent from the governor's original proposal on the budget into our proposal. But we do believe that it is important, and I hope that and trust that we have the governor's support, that people in Minnesota, elected people in Minnesota, have the opportunity to manage the state budget. And what we produce is a document that reflects that. We hope that that will be endorsed by all Minnesotans, regardless of their political affiliation. And we think that going forward, that is a principle that we absolutely have to have. We cannot afford to continue to see the kinds of costs that we have seen in this budget area over the years, many of which are driven by decisions made outside of the state. I think that we have got to get the decisions about how we spend money and what we do back into the state legislature. And at some point, we're going to have to confront that. And I think this is an opportunity that we have. I'm, as I said before, the indications I've had from the governor's commissioner, they have been open to that idea. Whether or not they'll be open to this specific idea, we will find out. But we look forward to working with them going forward.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bergman.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, I am under the impression that you are not taking the challenge that I gave to you seriously to get a balanced budget without relying on waivers that we might not get. And so I am just here to tell you, I have amendments for waivers that will generate money, and if they do not have fiscal notes, you better not ask for them to be ruled out of order.
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, I have no comment. I'm not going to rule any amendments out of order. I'm just going to remind members that we have a target that we have to meet, and I would assume that any amendments would be would keep our budget within the target.
Very good.
But I won't rule any amendments out of order on the basis of an amendment.
Very good. Thank you. No further questions, no further comments. This committee is adjourned, and we'll see you tomorrow at 8:30.